Sunday, April the 10th, 1983. I am here in NYC at last, brimming with fear and insecurity. Getting in late last night on British Airways, I suddenly felt the enormousness of New York City. The noise of it, the speed of it, the lonely obliviousness of so many people trying to get ahead. My London bravado began to evaporate. I wished I was with Harry, who I knew would be sitting at his computer in front of his study window in Kent, furiously pounding away about Rupert Murdoch. I am staying at the Royalton Hotel on West 44th Street, opposite the Algonquin Hotel. It's a bit of a flea pit, but in walking distance to the Condé Nast headquarters at 350 Madison Avenue. The man at the desk seemed half asleep when I checked in, and there was no one around to haul my bag to the elevator. All the way in from JFK in the taxi, a phone-in show was blaring a woman with a rasping German accent, talking in excruciating detail about blowjobs. The instructions crackling from the radio to take it into mouth and move it slowly up and down got so oppressive I asked the cab driver what the hell he was listening to. He said it was a sex therapist called Dr. Ruth, who apparently gives advice on the radio and has an enormous following. As soon as I woke up, I rushed to the newsstand on the corner to look for the April issue of Vanity Fair. The second edition is even more baffling than the first one I saw in London in February. So begins my Vanity Fair diaries, scribbled over the years in blue school exercise books late at night after dinners, or on planes to London, or in a book-lined area overlooking the Atlantic Ocean in Quag on Long Island, or in the small hours of the morning when I couldn't get back to sleep after a midnight bottle feed of one of my two children. When in 2015 I started to look into the diaries again, my intention was to use them as a refresher for a book I was thinking of writing about the crazy 80s. But the more I read, the more I realized I'd already written one. The writer of a memoir or a history knows from the outset where the story is going and how it will end. The diarist doesn't have a clue what's round the corner. All one can know about is the past, and with any luck, the onrushing present. That's a feature of the form, not a bug. What you lose in omniscience and perspective, you gain in heedless immediacy and suspense. Opening the volumes, I was amazed to rediscover how madcap those days and years were, how chancy, how new, how supercharged. And I found that the recklessness of the telling, so many instant insights as often to be regretted as vindicated, was the way to surf the 80s at the speed those years were lived. Let me forewarn. These were years spent amid the moneyed elite of Manhattan and L.A. and the Hamptons in the overheated bubble of the world's glitziest, most glamour-focused magazine publishing company, Condé Nast, during the Reagan era. Please don't expect ruminations on the sociological fallout of trickle-down economics. My Vanity Fair did its share of investigative reporting on the crimes and cruelties of politics and policy. But as day-to-day, night-to-night experience, this was the gilded, often egregious 80s as lived at the top. Today, when most of the time I yearn to be under my duvet at night binging on Netflix's latest noir heart pounder, I'm blown away by the sheer number of dinners, galas, cocktail parties I attended as editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair. The social energy of the 80s in New York was ferocious. When did I sleep? It turns out to have been an asset that I'm allergic to alcohol. Most of these accounts of dinner parties probably wouldn't have happened if I'd had a glass in my hand. By the time I became editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair in January 1984, Ronald Reagan was on a glide path to re-election. He had made an improbable journey from radio announcer to mid-level movie star to union leader to television host to two-term governor of California to president of the United States. Reagan's ascent to the White House marked the definitive end of one era, that of the turbulent 1960s and its threadbare 70s endgame, and the supersonic launch of another gilded age. Tax cuts for the wealthy in 1981 unleashed animal spirits on Wall Street. There were new buzzwords like junk bonds and arbitrage. Go-getters in suspenders, their eyes ablaze with the thrill of winning, thrived in an orgy of mergers and acquisitions. As Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan put it when asked to define the 80s, We borrowed $1 trillion from the foreigners and used the money to throw a big party.